Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Arsenal Özil, marca Mesut Özil, el envío al área, el remate, y ahí está el primer tanto del partido, no lo celebra por supuesto, Aaron Ramsey, 0-1 para el Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always with James from Gunnerblog. Buenos dias, James.
Indeed, buenos dias to you.
Yes, you're transcontinental this week. You're in Spain.
I am. I'm in, well, Mallorca, in fact.
Yeah, that's part of Spain.
Yeah, no, it still counts. It still counts. I'm here visiting some family. It's lovely. Really nice. Although, storms forecast for the next week, so yeah. We'll see how we go.
Lovely summer weather, of course.
Yeah, indeed.
Speaking of storms and all that kind of stuff, there's the small matter of the North London Derby that took place on Saturday, a 1-1 draw with Spurs. Disappointing 1-1 draw, all things considered. I don't quite know where to start with this game, because we could talk about the result, we could talk about the performance, we could talk about the injuries, and it seems to have created I don't know what the right word is. The reaction to it hasn't been overwhelmingly positive, as you would expect. But I get the sense that this is not simply to do with Spurs, even though obviously that's a factor. I think another 1-1 draw or another draw with a couple of injuries thrown in on top of a not entirely unconvincing performance would have provoked much the same reaction. But for me, this was a game that Arsenal should have won because in terms of possession, in terms of territory, I think we pretty much dominated the game. What was disappointing was, A, that we didn't manage to turn that possession into real clear-cut chances. And secondly, the old downfall once again where we gifted the opposition a goal.
Yeah, I think, everyone's feeling a little bit down on it. You'd kind of expect that after a late equaliser, spirits might be quite buoyant. But I think we kind of needed a win, really, to make our start to the season look that bit healthier. What is it, 2 wins from 6 in the league now, I think?
Yeah, 4 times we've gone behind and come back.
Yeah, so. I mean, still unbeaten. But, I mean, it the draws cost you in the end. I think, ultimately, being unbeaten's a good thing, healthy for morale, shows we're resilient, but dropping these 2 points time after time is going to, it's going to matter when the league table is all added up at the end of the season. And I think this derby particularly felt like one we should win. Spurs aren't in a great place. They've got a new manager. They're still getting used to his style of play. They'd lost to West Brom the week before. They've put in some really dodgy performances this season. And it felt like a match we should have had enough to go and win, really. And I think going behind is so crucial. We dominated the game. We played with a measure of patience. But then as soon as you concede a goal as sloppily as we did, you're on the back foot and trying to save it, retrieve it, which is a massive hill to climb.
What's your take on the goal? Because a lot of people suggested that Szczęsny should have not thrown the ball out so quickly. Others that, well, my feeling is that it was a bread and butter piece of football for Flamini to deal with. It was a pass. He took his eye off the ball. He wasn't aware that Eriksen was anywhere near him. He got bundled off the ball by Eriksen, who's not exactly an enforcer of any kind. No. My feeling is that that's the way we play and have played like that for as long as I can remember under Arsene Wenger, is that we move the ball quickly out of defence, particularly when they were pushing men up the field because it was a set piece. So I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the Szczęsny thing is worth mentioning just because it's been a bit of a worrying trend for me in the early portion of the season. His distribution's been a little bit questionable. And I think at certain times he seems very hurried to get the ball out. I mean, you almost wonder if he's under instruction about that.
Well, yeah, that could well be it, couldn't it?
Yeah, because he does it so repetitively. You think if the manager had a big issue with it, surely he would have come down like a ton of bricks by now. Because, you know, that kind of systematic decision-making does suggest maybe it's a strategic thing. Maybe it's something Arsene asked him to do. As for Flamini, I agree. It was a big error. And it actually reminded me, was there not a similar one at the Etihad last season where he was dispossessed? I can't remember. In the 6-3, I seem to remember something about him playing a poor pass or taking a heavy touch just on the edge of his own box. So it's something we've seen before. And he's not had a great start to the season, has he? Because you could question him on Manchester City's goal at the Emirates a few weeks ago when he didn't quite track Sergio Aguero. So a couple of costly errors already for Flamini, and that will do little to dampen the calls for a new defensive midfielder.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, that's not something we can deal with, you know, in the very short term. Particularly because Mikel Arteta is out injured. He picked up an injury on Saturday, a calf injury. Aaron Ramsey with a hamstring injury. Jack Wilshere with an ankle injury. So the midfield options that we have, and thankfully we do have options, are going to be put to the test. I mean, he doesn't have any choice but to play Flamini as that central midfielder. People suggested to him that perhaps Chambers might play there, but he said, I can't, I've only got four defenders, as if that was, well, some kind of surprise or restriction that had been placed upon him by outside forces. So I think it's got to be Flamini, either that or he dips right into the youth and uses Hayden, who's, although he's played at centre-half, is a defensive midfield player.
Well, what about Coughlin? Would you consider Coughlin?
Coughlin, yeah, I guess he could do that, but again,
it's difficult to see him starting ahead of Flamini, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe, but I mean, I think it all depends on how the manager views Flamini's form or how much faith he has in Flamini, which I think is obviously enough for him to start against Galatasaray and probably against Chelsea, because he'll want his experience in there. But what did you make of the team selection?
Team selection.
Yeah,
I was very surprised that Alexis didn't start. I have to say, a bit baffled to be honest, because he's been one of the bright sparks, hasn't he, in the early portion of the season, and top scorer with 4 goals, capable of doing something out of nothing. There were all those stories in the week before about his level of application in training, how up for the game he was. And then for him to not be included, I thought was very odd. What did you make of it?
I thought it was odd as well. You know, I'll caveat this by saying I thought Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain played really well. And that was one of the bright spots of last weekend for me, was Oxlade-Chamberlain. Obviously the goal, but I just thought the way he played, the positive way he played, was really promising. But if it were me, I would have chosen Cazorla on the left, Alexis on the right, Ozil in the middle. I would have left Jack Wilshere on the bench, played Arteta and Ramsey, and just gone with the system that worked against Aston Villa. So, well, I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Because it did work against Aston Villa. We looked in those moments decisive and threatening when we had the chance to make the most of that system. And, you know, given the way they started the season, you wouldn't have said that Spurs were a more threatening prospect than Aston Villa. So why the need to change? And it's confusing because you get the accusations that Arsene Wenger doesn't do tactics, but clearly this was a tactical decision on his part. He thought this was the best way to go about winning the game. Turns out it wasn't right. I know it's a little bit how we were hamstrung by the injuries that we had, because you've got attacking players that you can't then bring on because you've got to replace the midfielders. But I just found it really odd that, you know, this could have been a game where we played that system again. I think against that Tottenham team, it would have worked. And then you start to get a confidence in the team and a confidence with the way that we're playing and with the way that we're set up in that manner. I mean, he said that the 4-1-4-1 formation was because he wanted us to be a bit more solid in big games. But if we can't be more solid in regular games, how is that going to apply to, you know, Sunday, for example?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't fill me with loads of confidence. It is strange, and he does seem to be tinkering with the team and with the way he sets up his team more than we've ever seen before. And it's odd because for a long time people criticised Arsene Wenger for not being flexible enough in his tactics. Now he almost seems too loose. He doesn't seem to know, you know, quite what his best 11 is. And I thought against Aston Villa we stumbled upon something that really worked, and to reject that in the next Premier League game, very, very strange. And as well as Oxlade-Chamberlain played, I do think Alexis could probably have contributed just as much over the 90 minutes. And also there's nothing that precludes you potentially from playing both. And I think that was a particularly baffling decision because the guy's been great. I mean, I have, you know, did you, I mean, Tim Steelman did a column for AskBlog.com about Alexis, I believe, and about his ball retention. And you know, he spoke about being the difficulty of, you know, finding room for both Alexis's style and Ozil's style. Ozil's much more of this continuity player. Alexis is someone who will give away the ball because he'll try things that much harder. And one wonders if maybe that could be counting against him in terms of selection.
Maybe
theories there.
Well, maybe the way to deal with that is to use Ozil and Alexis in a way that gets the best out of both of them. So put Alexis on the end of Ozil's passes rather than bank on Alexis being somebody who's going to do a lot in the build-up. Mm-hmm. You know, it was one of the things people said, wasn't it, when Arsenal signed him, that, you know, there are times where his passing or his ball retention or some of the decision-making isn't great. But, you know, I think when a guy, you spend £30 million on a player who's got all the attributes you want in a forward, going into a North London derby, the work rate, the application, he's tough, he can finish, he can take a free kick. You know, I just found it bizarre that he didn't start. Bizarre.
Yeah, and I think that when he does give the ball away, it's not born of selfishness or even carelessness. It's because he's got a certain courage in the way he plays, and he does attempt things that are, you know, high risk but high reward.
Yeah.
And I think you need a bit of that sometimes. You know, we're, as a team, we can be guilty of overplaying or, you know, looking to just keep the passes going, whereas Alexis is someone who will take that gamble in the final third, and if it comes off, you might get yourself a goal. So I think there's plenty of room inside for someone like that. And I really hope to see him back in ASAP.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? It's for Arsene Wenger to figure out what his best 11 is and how to get the best out of that that group of players. And that seems to be the issue so far this season, that he's not sure. He can't be sure, given the way he set his team up, about how to fit all those players into the team. And that's being reflected in the results, no?
I think so. I mean, how concerned are you by the start? There seems to be varying degrees. You know, there'll be some people who argue, well, we're unbeaten, it's early days, and others who'll point at our points tally. You know, we're down on last season for the same fixtures, I believe, and we'll be alarmed. Where do you stand on that?
Beginning to get a bit concerned, I have to say, because, you know, there is part of you that can look at things in a rational way and say, we've got new players, we've got a manager who's tinkering with the style, so, you know, we're not getting that fluency in our game. We've got the whole post-World Cup thing, etc., etc., you know, which affected our first month. But then, you know, some of the old habits that have been most frustrating about Arsenal are beginning to creep back into our game. This self-destruction that we have. You know, Tottenham really weren't threatening at all on Saturday, and then we gave them a goal. And that's pretty much what we used to do. We know that stat about, you know, teams that have scored with their first shot against us. And I just wonder if these flaws are just too inherent in our game for us to be really comfortable this season. It is a worry, I think. You know, bearing in mind we are still very early in the season. Particularly with what's coming up on Sunday, I'm quite worried. What about you?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same. I kind of think a win in the derby would have put a certain sheen over our start so far. You know,
yeah,
it would have enabled people to feel a lot better about what's gone on. I think it would have helped morale. It would have helped our points total too. And I think having failed to win that game, I think there's probably there must be a certain degree of trepidation among all fans about next weekend where we face Chelsea. And I kind of feel like that result feels like it could be a pivotal one, because if we get something positive there, then suddenly the picture looks a lot brighter. But lose, and this won't look like a strong start at all.
No.
And fixture-wise, it was never going to be easy. You know, we went to Everton, of course. We had this derby. We had Manchester City. But we'll be losing ground on the league leaders pretty early on in the campaign. And that's, you know, with a Jose Mourinho side at the forefront, never easy to recover.
No. And we know from seasons past that, you know, if you fall too far behind early on, it becomes almost impossible to catch up.
I just think for the mood of the fans, like, I don't think anyone wants to feel this early on like we're just in a battle for the top four, you know, the fourth qualification place or anything like that. I think the longer that we can sustain some sort of challenge, the more exciting the season is for everyone. And I think, you know, if we're going to do that, we might need to go to Stamford Bridge and get something. So yeah, we shall see.
Mm, indeed. The injuries, then. Arsene Wenger says, I don't understand. We've got to analyse this. Arteta didn't play in midweek against... who the hell was it? Southampton in the Capital One Cup. Aaron Ramsey didn't, but both players have gone off with muscle strains. And look, if a guy gets a kick in the knee and gets injured, or he gets tripped up like Wilshere was and went over on his ankle because of the kick he got, then look, you know, that's part and parcel of the game. You've got to accept that. And no team goes through a season without injuries. But two muscle strains, to varying degrees. Some suggestion that Ramsey could be out for as much as 6 weeks. That looks like it could be a Podolski-esque hamstring rather than just a little strain. Arteta for a couple of weeks anyway. It's that's a real worry.
Yeah, it sounds like Shad Forsyth might be getting called into Arsene's office sometime this week. It's really strange, isn't it? I mean, perhaps it's something to do with the fact that we have changed our physio staff, our medical team over, and the players are being put through a process of adaptation. Maybe that slight change in preparation has had a disturbing effect. Maybe it's just bad luck. I feel like saying it's bad luck, when you look at our history of problems, is a little bit rich, really. It seems unlikely, statistically, that could be the case. Mm. It's a big concern, because already, you know, in Giroud and Debuchy, we've lost two first-team starters for half a season. You know, that's a pretty significant loss. And then with these on top, I mean, if Ramsey's as bad as you say, then that's another big, big blow. So very hard to make head nor tail of. I mean, what do you think? It can't be anything to do with Shad, can it?
No, I don't think it can at this point, but... that point you made was something I said on the blog, that maybe the new methods are having an effect. But look, whatever it is, I don't believe it's bad luck. You can't have this kind of a problem ongoing for such a long period of time for it to be bad luck only. Mm. There's got to be something, whether it's the training methods, the training pitches, the hardness of the pitch. I just don't know what it might be. Either that, or we have assembled and continue to assemble a collection of the world's most brittle footballers. I just don't know.
But then you'd say the systematic problem might be in the medicals we give. You know, it's very, very hard to understand how it's come to this. But as you say, it happens year on year to our club, more so than anyone else's.
Yeah.
The stats back it up. You know, the injury tables, we're consistently up there. And there must be something going on, and you can only hope that the changes in staff that they have made this summer will iron that out over time, because it doesn't seem to have had the immediate impact we might have hoped for.
No, I think it was always going to take time, but I don't suppose anybody thought that in nearly every game this season we'd pick up an injury. You know, we picked up three, basically, against Spurs, you know? So maybe I don't know. It's impossible to answer, and it's one of the questions people have been asking us. And
it's the muscular ones are the ones, aren't they? Yeah. They shouldn't really happen. You know, they can, but if you read around, if the preparation is right and the players are suitably warm, etc., the risk of those should be relatively low.
Yeah.
But with us, they just seem to pop, you know, at any given point.
All right. Well, look,
it's like Pringles.
And once you pop, you can't stop.
Indeed.
All right. Well, we'll wait for our... they're disgusting, aren't they? Pringles. Do you like Pringles?
No.
I fucking hate Pringles.
I ate them a bit sort of when they first got big, as far as I'm aware. Like I think it was the mid-90s. I think it was the novelty of crisps in a tube.
Yeah, but they were at the same time as Sunny Delight, remember?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, my insides are still recovering. But Sunny Delight tasted quite like vomit, I seem to remember.
Mm.
But Pringles, I can't really eat them anymore. I ate a lot of the sort of sour cream ones, and it's kind of scarred me. Mm. I don't want to go back to that place.
Yeah, my daughter used to like them quite a lot, and you know, she'd hand me a couple, and I go, no, they're disgusting, I'm not having them. And then I'd take one, and then realize that no, I do really hate them because they taste like licking the top of a battery, basically. Fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
But there you
still
go.
Still going, though. Still going.
Yeah.
You can't stop.
People are still popping and not stopping. It's ridiculous.
Won't somebody help them?
Right. We're going to take a short break. We're back with some of your questions right after this. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. Just to remind you, of course, that next week's Arsecast Extra will be taking place live in the bar in Union Chapel. Thank you to everybody who bought a ticket. Sorry we didn't have more. But, yeah. So
hey, I mean, if it goes well, you never know. We might do more.
I think we will. Yeah, provided it's not one of those nights after next Sunday at Stamford Bridge. Maybe we should, you know, prepare a few songs or something to cheer people up.
Might need something to enliven it. No, it'll be a celebratory podcast of a famous victory, I'm sure.
Yes, yes. I'm sure.
Should we have a question?
Yeah, let's have a question. I'm going to go first, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry, just to, you know.
It's your website.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah, that's fine. All right. This one comes from Carl Phillip. He's at The General 1981, and it goes back to something Arsene Wenger talked about. I think it was after the Southampton game. I think it was Amy Lawrence who asked a question about Abu Diaby playing deeper in the midfield. And he wants to know, could Diaby be the saviour to our DM problem if fit? And he's got a little quotation mark around if. And I think it probably should have been around fit. But what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, as ifs go, that's a significant if, certainly. My thoughts on it are, I don't think it's a serious option, really. I think, you know, as an emergency situation, maybe. I mean, I thought it was telling that after the Spurs game, Wenger was running through his midfield options and he sort of said, Diaby's not ready to play, you know, at that kind of level. Which I think tells you everything you need to know. You know, he's not actually someone who Wenger could consider starting in the Premier League or the Champions League.
Does that surprise you? Because we know the cruciate injury that he got took place in March 2013, yeah. And he actually made a comeback at the end of last season. I think he played against Norwich away, mm-hmm. You know, only a brief cameo. But then he's had the whole summer. Do you think it's a case that there are ongoing issues with his fitness? Because it's not a situation that we've heard about a new injury or a setback or anything like that. Do you think there are ongoing issues, or is he just being super, super cautious with him? And if that's the case, what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel a little bit like he's just managing him through the season, keeping him fit to give him a chance of earning a contract elsewhere come the summer. I find it very hard to foresee a situation where Diaby stays at Arsenal. And I think Wenger probably feels, you know, he needs to protect the player to protect his career. Now, whether or not that's his responsibility is another question. But, you know, after the Southampton game, a few people did tweet me and I saw.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
People saying, could he be a serious option? You know, because in some ways he's appealing, as Wenger said himself. You pay a lot of money to buy a player with some of those inherent attributes, the power Diaby's got, the skill on the ball. But playing your most injury-prone player in the most combative area of the field, you know, we saw three midfielders go down against Spurs. If Diaby had been playing, it almost certainly would have been four. And I can't foresee that happening in any serious way, really. What about yourself?
Emergency only, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even his natural game, is it? He's always been a much more forward thinking player, and somebody who, you know, at times has operated almost as a second striker. So for him to be an effective defensive midfielder, I think is a bit of a stretch. But given the way the injuries are going, you know, it might be a case that we have to use him. But you know, he's still got Flamini and he's still got Coquelin, who I suspect will probably be picked ahead of Diaby should the need arise.
I kind of agree with that. I kind of think even if those two went, he might even play Hector Bellerin in a right back and move Callum Chambers in. I can't see Diaby being risked to start big games. And Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's another player who I think might get a few games in the middle of the park now, especially as that would allow Alexis to come in on the right-hand side. So
Thomas Rosicki? Yeah.
Thomas Rosicki too, potentially. Although he's more comfortable further upfield, isn't he, than those deeper roles. But yeah, I'm pleased to see Diaby playing again, but I don't foresee it happening regularly at Arsenal between now and the end of the season. But as you say, with this spate of injuries, you never know.
All right, your question.
Okay, let's have a question. This one comes from Fotanen, at Fotanen with an F. And he says, do you think Arsenal's relationship with players makes them feel safe and that they subsequently don't give their best?
No, I don't think so. I think that to be at this level of football and this level of the sport, I think you've got to have a certain amount of drive and self-motivation. I think he likes to create an environment without a great deal of conflict. He's not, as we know, the same kind of manager as Alex Ferguson, who ruled by fear, by terrorizing his players. That was the way that he did it. And Arsene Wenger, as we know, is almost the polar opposite in that he makes them feel like, you know, they're valued, and by by giving them confidence he can get the best out of them because they feel, you know, they're in a good place. They're not motivated by fear. They're just, they feel good and they feel like they can do anything. Maybe that's not working with some of the players, but I don't think that it's an overly friendly relationship that he has with them. There's still that distance between manager and player. Yeah, there has to be, because he's got to make difficult decisions and he's got to make hard decisions and decisions that certain players won't like. I wouldn't have thought that's the case. But I do think as well that there is room for a bit of that fear and terror at times, you know?
Yeah, what do you make of, for example, I know after the Spurs game, Arsene was keen to emphasise that he couldn't criticise the attitude of his players, things like that. I mean, do you think there's any danger of a kind of comfort zone developing with that sort of thing?
No, but I think he always says that. You know, talks about the character and the mental strength, as we know. And he won't ever be hugely critical in public of the players. And, you know, against Spurs, even though I thought it was a game we should have won, I don't think it was a game that we necessarily played particularly badly in. Yeah. You know, I've seen us play a lot worse than that. So I don't think it was even a question of attitude from our players. I think it was just the quality of the performance and the way that the team was set up didn't get the best out of the players that we had. And that comes back to the manager.
Mm. And I think the crucial words you said there are in public. You know, Arsene presents a certain image of his team, and I think there's a lot of the PR that goes on, a lot of, you know, player management and media management. And I think he is very loath to be public in his criticism. He never wants to talk about individual players, particularly negatively. And I think that that's, you know, to protect his team as much as anything else. He'd rather the criticism was on him, as spiky as he can be.
Mm.
And I think that's good. And we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. And I'm sure that when they're warranted, rollickings are dished out.
Mm. All right. Okay, here's one. This one comes from Larry Lamkin. Larry Lamkin. And he wants to know, quite simply, is the current Arsenal side worse than last season's team?
Well, if you were to play the two against each other in some sort of fantasy arena, where some players would have to be cloned in order to facilitate that.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that last season would win currently. Yes, I would definitely go with that. What about yourself?
Yeah, probably. Just because, going back to the things that we've said about, you know, the style change and the players not being comfortable and the manager not knowing what his best team was. Last season, I think he knew very well what his best team was. Now, that might have been in part because he didn't have as many options as he does this time around.
It was a much more cohesive team, and you could name that first 11 pretty easily. And thinking back to last season, who were the... I suppose Mesut Ozil was the signing, really, wasn't it? Mathieu Flamini.
Yeah.
But they had quite a clear role in the team. Ozil was playing through the centre with kind of a free role, liberated. So there wasn't a huge amount of adaptation required for him. But at the moment, with the new team we've got, we're trying to fit, you know, several new players in. And also there's that slight doubt over what shape suits us best. So I just feel like the old last season's team played with greater conviction because they were more certain of what they were doing.
Mm.
Now, replay that match in 6 months' time, and the result might be the reverse. You know, I do think that there's a lot of potential in the players that we've got at the moment and room to grow.
Do you think that this is a team that can, once it clicks, perform a lot better?
Yeah, I do, actually. It's just the concern of how long it takes. And that's the job of the manager, is to, you know, do that alchemy, take these ingredients and turn it into something quite dynamic. I mean, I think... you know, I've said before, we've got the potential to be one of the most exciting attacking teams in the league when you look at the players we've got. And yes, there are some flaws on the defensive side. We probably could do with a more powerful midfield presence, but I don't think that should prohibit us from being absolutely enthralling to watch going forward. And that hasn't quite happened yet.
Could fixtures play a part in that? Because if you look at what happens after Chelsea on Sunday, there's an interlull. And then we come back, and the fixtures then go like this. Hull City, Anderlecht away, Sunderland away, Burnley at home, Anderlecht at home, Swansea away, Manchester United at home, Dortmund at home, West Brom, Southampton, Stoke, Galatasaray, Newcastle, and then we play Liverpool on the 20th of December. So that little spell there in November, that 1 week where we've got Manchester United and Borussia Dortmund, that aside, you're looking at a run of fixtures in which we really should be looking to build momentum and also a big points total.
Yeah, we have to. We've got to build up a head of steam there, you know, if we're to be in the mix.
So, I mean, is that the defining period of this season between, let's say, after Chelsea and up to the Liverpool game, which I think is on the... Let me just have a quick look here. It's on the 20th of December. So there's a run in which we'll know probably more about how this team is going to fare, no?
I think so. And tempting as it is to draw conclusions at this early stage, I think... You know, by the end of that run, we'll definitely know a lot more. Because, you know, we're about to enter October. For all the doubts over team selection and who should be where and who should be on the pitch and who shouldn't, Arsene should be starting to come to conclusions about that sort of thing by now. He's had these players for a little bit of time. He's been working with them on the training ground. He should know the answers to some of those questions. So that will be a very, very telling period. And I'm sure we will pick up more points and things will start to feel a bit better. I do think we've had a difficult start on the fixtures front. But, you know, we will be judged on how we do in those big games. It's easy to say, set aside United, set aside Dortmund. But one of the major failings of Arsenal's teams in recent years has been their capacity to deal with elite opposition. So, you know, hopefully we'll be going into those games with a good run behind us and might fare slightly better.
All right. Okay. Another question from you.
Another question. Okay. Liam Tullett asks, what is it that's making us concede the first goal in so many games this season? And do you think we play better when we're a goal down?
That's a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
First part, I'm not 100% sure what it is other than lack of concentration or, you know, an inability to get on top of the game before they get a chance. You know, we've often seen where they score with their first shot on goal after we've had, you know, a number of chances that we've missed.
Yeah, it's the bigger problem that we're not getting the first goal.
Yeah. I think that's what it is. I mean, you can go back to the game at Stamford Bridge last season where Giroud had a chance and kind of scuffed it.
Yeah. That's the phone. Can you hear that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, I can hear that.
All right, okay. It's been answered now, don't worry.
All right, okay. I could edit this out, but I'm not going to. So we'll go back to the part where, you know, Giroud had a chance at Stamford Bridge. Wasn't a... like a simple chance, but maybe the kind of chance you would expect a striker at a top club to score. He didn't. They scored. Bang, bang, bang. And off you go. So I think it's more about us not getting the first goal than them getting the first goal.
Yeah,
but you could put that down to lack of concentration or application. And what was the second part of the question?
Do we play better once we've gone behind?
Well, I think you play differently, don't you, when you're behind? You've got to, because you know you've got to chase a game. So you're a little more ambitious. You get stuck in a little more. You know, you're willing to take more risks. There's more energy to your game. So I don't think it's ideal, but...
It changes the dynamic for the other team as well, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah.
They might be more inclined to sit back. You might get more of the ball. It changes the whole pattern of the game. So I do think that the issue is that maybe we're not capitalising on our fast starts. You know, think of the Dortmund game where we're absolutely battered. We still could have gone ahead in that game if we'd been a bit more clinical up top.
Yeah.
And the Manchester City match, likewise, we probably should have, on the balance of play, found a way to break through in that first 15 minutes when we were absolutely outstanding.
Mm.
I must confess I missed the very start of the Spurs game. How did we play in the first 20 minutes or so?
Yeah, all right. I mean, we were pretty much on top.
Right.
You know, a lot of the ball, we started quite brightly. I'm not sure we had a great many chances. I'm just going to look back on the live blog here. And, then, you know, yeah, we've lots of the ball. but didn't create anything really clear cut. I think Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain had a good chance from the edge of the box that was created by Ramsey, but you know, nothing that you would have said, right, we've got to score from there.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly in the second half, we were better, actually, when Cazorla came on. The injury to Ramsey changed the shape of the team, and we were better for it, which isn't to, you know, suggest any happiness with Ramsey's injury or anything like that. But, yeah, I mean, it's been a worry for a while.
I think that the secret is to capitalise on that, on those fast starts and turn that possession into chances, because once we get ahead, we've got a team, you know, that will force the opposition to come out, and we've got a team who could be really threatening on the break. You know, we saw at Aston Villa that we can be very, very effective away from home. And I think, you know, we need to get in front, and then we'll be able to build from there. You know, Liverpool were great at that last season. They always started like a house on fire, didn't they, tearing into teams from kickoff. And once they got that goal, they then had the pace to capitalise when teams had to come at them. And I think we've got a similar collection of forwards this year who could do something similar. So that's really got to be the key. We need to try and turn these positive starts into actual tangible scorelines, because then we won't be in quite so much danger if we make a mistake as Flamini did.
All right. I think it's my turn, is it?
Yeah, it is.
All right. This one comes from Ope Alabi, whose Twitter name is at Ope1 Kenobi.
Very good.
Quite good. He wants to know, with Wilshere possibly out, Arteta and Ramsey out, would you start Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in the centre of midfield now? That is where Arsene Wenger has long said that his future lies. Mm-hmm. You know, is it time?
I think it is, to be honest. As good as he was on the right wing against Tottenham, I think, you know, when you look at the options we've got left, I think Flamini is an automatic pick, as you say. And then I think I'd be looking at Oxlade-Chamberlain alongside him, because he's got that athleticism, he's got that dynamism that makes him a decent substitute for Ramsey. And yeah, he'd be in there for me, because that allows you to then accommodate Alexis on the wing. I don't think you lose anything in that wide position by bringing him in. And I think that's the way to have the most balance. So I'd certainly be playing him there against Galatasaray Wednesday night. What about you?
Yeah, I'd be really tempted also. I think he's at a point where he needs to start playing regularly to develop. And I think that if he does, then he can be a really, really good player. You know, he's one of the only players who will have a crack from distance. He's good on the ball. He's strong. He can dribble. He can do perhaps what Arsene Wenger likes Jack Wilshere to do, which is to drive forward through the midfield and create space. We saw, was it last season against Bayern? He had an incredible dribble halfway around the pitch. You know, I think he's got everything in his locker, but he doesn't have the experience, and without playing, he's never going to get it. So yeah, you know, needs must, and I think I'd be quite inclined to give him a game in there.
Who was it? Someone was raving about him recently. Was it Santi Cazorla or someone of that? One of the players in the squad just saying he can be basically as good as he wants to be. You know, he can do everything, and I'm inclined to agree with that. I mean, it was a good goal he scored the weekend, but like he says, he should score more. He's got all the attributes you look for. He can shoot, he can dribble, he can run. I think this could be a big, big season for him after missing so much of the last campaign. And I do still feel that maybe in the long term, that central position will suit him best.
Yeah, I mean, he's only just 21. So, yeah, you know, still very, very young. And it's all ahead of him. But yeah, I mean, why not? Why not? I think, you know, it was almost getting to a point with our midfield where I was thinking, you know, just for the need to do something different, that he could be an option anyway, even without injuries. Let's try something a bit different to add some drive to our midfield. So yeah, now that the injuries have mounted up, I say give him a go.
Cool. Let's have another question. This is from Simon Day. I thought this was very interesting. He asks, seemingly everyone wants a new DM, but with our open attack, would someone like a Matic even make a difference?
I don't know that much about Matic in the sense that I haven't watched him play a great deal, you know?
Sure,
So I don't quite know what type of player he is. Having to watch Chelsea is like, I just don't like it anyway, but I especially don't like it this season
More difficult than ever.
Yeah. So I watched the Man City game, and yeah, that was really the first time I've seen them. But yeah, maybe it would, because I think when you play an open attacking game and you get your fullbacks forward, the onus is on the defensive midfielder to provide that cover. Mm. So we saw it against Manchester City when our fullbacks pushed forward. Flamini was caught, I think, in midfield where, was it, I think it was Flamini that the ball rebounded off, wasn't it? To go out, and maybe a better, faster, quicker, stronger central midfield player makes that a tackle and the ball goes out of play, or he keeps the ball for Arsenal. There was a moment, I think, it could have been in that Chelsea-Man City game where Man City were pushed forward and Chelsea looked to break and had the ball in midfield, and all of a sudden one of their Fernand guys came just steaming back from where he was and made a tackle and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, I think that player could make a difference if you insist on playing a system where your fullbacks are pushed up and therefore leave space in behind. The onus is on that central defensive midfield player to provide the cover left and right. Otherwise, you get your centre halves pulled out of position, and as we know, that can prove costly. I mean, what's your thoughts? I mean, yeah, it's one of those situations that I think it's just going to be an ongoing story for the rest of the season, or until we get that kind of a player in.
Well, exactly, and you know, in some ways, it's moot. We can't do anything about it now, but I am inclined to agree with you. I think a player would make a difference in that position. I think, in fact, the way that we play makes that role all the more important. And obviously, we hope that is something Arsene addresses sooner rather than later. But for now, until January at least, we've got to stick with what we got.
Yeah. All right. Final question then. This comes from Andy. He's Andy P. Designer. So I don't know if, yeah.
He designs peas.
Designs P.
Round and green.
Yeah, or indeed we.
Of course.
Because that's another word for P.
Yeah.
I hope we're not impugning his designing skills or anyone.
I mean, I think we have, but never mind.
If there's any potential clients out there who are looking for Andy to design something, he's ace.
Yeah. Be it urine or vegetables.
Mm-hmm. He's got the line. Yeah. But he wants to know, is a mid-90s diet of alcoholism and cocaine what's needed to sort out our injury problems?
Yeah, maybe. It did seem to work rather better then, didn't it?
Well, yeah, we were more robust.
We were, yeah. These were real men.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember. Did we have anything like as many injuries back in those days?
I don't think so.
Doesn't seem to me so, and I think
we had a smaller group of players, didn't we, who seemed to be pretty much always available.
Yeah, and I think if they tore their hamstring, they just knock back a lager and get on with it.
Yeah,
probably.
Maybe we need to change. Who is it? Gatorade doing our rehydration? Maybe we should just get Jack Daniels.
Maybe they'd certainly feel the pain a bit less.
They certainly would. And in the winter, particularly the foreign players, thinking the Alexis, the Cazorla, you know, they would feel warmed. Get a nice Spanish brandy.
Hmm, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah,
I mean, we might as well give it a go. Nothing else has worked.
That's true. The scientific approach. I'm not sure that the cocaine thing would probably, you know, you could fall foul of the authorities there. I wonder, is there a rule against players drinking alcohol? Is it against the rules?
Certainly not performance enhancing, I can tell you from experience.
Yeah, I did that once. I went to, we had a nice summer's day here one time in Dublin some years ago. Happens from time to time. And I was playing five-a-side at 6 o'clock. And we were having a bit of a barbecue. And I said, I'll have a glass of wine. And had a glass of wine. And then had another glass of wine. And then probably the rest of the bottle of wine. And then went to play five-a-side. I wasn't driving, should I? And the first thing I did was run onto the five-a-side pitch. Someone passed me the ball, you know, just before we'd even warmed up. And I kind of miskicked it and twisted my ankle. So it's not advisable.
No.
But maybe that's a wine thing. If I'd been taking whiskey, maybe I would have been more coordinated.
Perhaps so. Perhaps so. I can see, you know, a few defenders we've had down the years have looked a bit like they might have had a few wines before they stepped out. Mikhail Silvestre enjoyed a good Bordeaux, I think, before going on the field.
Yeah, and probably, you know, a big spliff.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Maybe let's leave it, I think.
Probably for the best.
It probably will lead to more injuries rather than less.
Yes, yeah. But look, they'd have a good time.
Indeed. They'd speaking of which, I'm going to get back to my holiday.
Oh, yes, you do that. Enjoy the storms.
Yes, I will.
And, of course, we'll see you next Monday evening in
Some of you will see me, literally, with your eyes.
it's a sight to behold, let me tell you.
It's a terrifying prospect.
All right. We'll have an Arsecast, of course, on Friday, looking ahead to the Chelsea game. Arsecast Extra live next Monday from the bar in Union Chapel on Upper Street. And it'll be available on Tuesday of next week, that one, because we've got to record it and all that. So until then, take it easy. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.